fools are we, stamping on evil till none remain. The brave amigos, the three brave amigos. Wherever they meet us, our destinies lead us. Amigos, we're always together.
Welcome to another Three Amigos podcast. The Three Amigos are here, Dominic Tiano, Reed Duffy, and myself, Kirk Ludeke, and it is our pleasure to bring you another podcast. I know it has been a while. What can I say? Hockey season has started. We're all busy. Dom, Reed, myself, we all have other full-time gigs that keep us hopping, but we wanted to get together and do another podcast just prior to the American Thanksgiving holiday. I know we've had Canadian Thanksgiving and all of that, but bottom line, we are here, and we want to start our podcast by talking about Craig Cunningham. For those of you who are hockey fans in general, Bruins fans in particular, or Arizona Coyotes fans, you know that on Saturday night while skating or preparing to play a game with the Tucson Roadrunners of the American Hockey League, Craig Cunningham collapsed to the ice during warmups, was evacuated by ambulance to a hospital, and it has since been reported that he suffered a heart attack. He is in serious but stable condition at last report. Our thoughts, prayers go out to Craig Cunningham and his family, and we just wanted to, as the Three Amigos, kind of talk about Craig a little bit and just the overwhelming outpouring of support that has gone on in the last couple of days since he had this emergency, and wish him well. What do you say, guys?
Well, you know, at such a young age, you don't want to see anybody go through that. And it's tough, especially tough for the family, with the majority of them at home in BC, and all they can do is sit and wait for a phone call. You know, as someone who's been through something like that, it's one of the worst things you could go through. And my heart goes out to Craig and the family, and my prayers, and, you know, they're in my thoughts.
One of the things about Craig Cunningham that made me a fan of him was his fighting spirit. And I think that's one of the big things in this situation that's really going to help him, in that, I mean, you talk about a guy who just never gives up, and he's got the heart of a lion, big time character. Can't say enough good things about what I know about Craig Cunningham, and just wishing him and his family all the very best. And this is where that spirit that he's got in him is going to come to the forefront, and we hope and believe that the best is going to come out of this for him and his family.
Bruins drafted Cunner in the fourth round of the 2010 NHL entry draft. He was in his final year of eligibility. He essentially willed himself into being an NHL player. He was a guy who, in the first couple years of his draft eligibility, wasn't on many NHL radars because he was an undersized player, but he just had a heart of a lion. He was one of those guys that instantly earned respect of a lot of his teammates in the room. I know Milan Lucic was a major advocate of his when the Bruins were considering drafting Cunningham, and were speaking to Milan about how he was as a teammate. For people who may not recall, Cunningham's first year in the WHL with the Vancouver Giants was Lucic's final season, when they won the Memorial Cup before Lucic earned a spot with the Bruins. What's interesting to me about that story is it's this urban myth that Lucic was advocating for Brendan Gallagher. It's not true. It was really Lucic was advocating for Craig Cunningham, and I know it's become this accepted story. He wasn't advocating as much for Gallagher as he was for Cunningham, because the Bruins asked him about him. But it's just an interesting story, you know, as a side. I don't want to get bogged down because the focus needs to be on Cunningham, but he just has the Boston Bruins attributes, and he was, you know, he came in and he had to work his way up. He was one of the most consistent presences for the Bruins down in the AHL. I think he had three consecutive seasons of 20 goals or more. with the Providence Bruins, was a leader down there. But just in my dealings with him, just a quality individual who always had time for any reporter. As much as his time he was willing to give, he was universally respected by teammates. And so this is why we've seen just a genuine outpouring of support. It would have happened regardless, because that's just how hockey players are. And the hockey family is so tight. And when someone goes through a personal tragedy like this, it's what people do. They come together no matter, you know, no matter what. But in Cunningham's case, it's pretty genuine. I would just throw one more thing out there. This is a family that has been through a lot. People may not be aware, but Craig Cunningham lost his father when he was 5 years old to a car accident. And his mother had to essentially raise the three boys and sacrifice a great deal as the only breadwinner to be able to not only provide a roof over their heads and food, but keep them in hockey. And so a lot of that example that his mother showed, and that iron will and that steel spine to get them through tough times, lean times as a family without his father, just really kind of instilled Craig Cunningham with that fighting spirit Reed mentioned. And so we wish him the absolute best. I'm confident he will recover because he's an athlete. He's strong. We're unsure of what his future in hockey is, but he's a winner in life. And no matter what he does, he's going to go on and, I think, be stronger from this event as a result and continue to inspire people. He just might have to do it in a slightly different way, but it's too early to say much more, and we just, you know, want to wish him the absolute and his family the absolute best.
Well said, Kurt.
Okay. Guys, here we are. We're almost 2 full months into the NHL season. The Bruins are hanging in there. But it just seems crazy to think that coming into this season, the narrative, the accepted narrative, and your, you know, present company included, I was right on the bandwagon that this defense was going to be a gong show and was going to be the reason that the Bruins were going to be held back, potentially, you know, suffering losses in the early going was going to be directly attributable to the defense. We've seen like some kind of bizarro world juxtaposition where the Bruins are top five in the league in goals allowed. Tuukka Rask is playing out of his mind, which we knew he had the ability to do. We just hadn't seen it for a while from him. But the offense, the one area that we really thought was going to be okay because of all of the veteran experience and the talent and the people they brought in terms of David Backes and some of the other guys coming up like Austin Zarnik. And, you know, we just thought the offense wasn't going to be the issue. And yet, you know, they've kind of been performing in fits and starts. Guys, let's throw it out there. Maybe Reed, we'll start with you. What do you think about the Boston Bruins in the early going, and what do we attribute some of this to?
It's been probably the most confusing season that I can remember as a fan of the Bruins, at least the most confusing start to a season that I can remember as a fan of this team. And when you look at it, who would have thought that immediately, not just that he would have made the team, because I know we were all high on Brandon Carlo, but that he would have had this kind of effect on the defense. I mean, we're not talking about a kid who broke in at 19 and started on the third pair. We're talking about a kid that broke in at 19 and is now playing opposite Zdeno Chara on the number one pair and making a darn good showing of himself up there. So the defense obviously has been completely turned on its head because Carlo was able to stand into that. Now you see Krug and McQuaid slot down. Much more comfortable seeing Adam McQuaid in a second pair role. And you see John Michael Lyles, who's been a nice veteran piece. He's been steady. He's been solid on the third pair with a combination of Colin Miller, who's looked good and looked a little off, and Joe Morrow, who I think doesn't have the offensive ceiling that a Colin Miller does, but might be a little bit more of a safer, more trustworthy defenseman at this point. That's kind of the last few games made the defense a little easier to predict in what you're going to see. But The offense, I think, more than anything, has been hurt by, well, David Krejci's slow start coming off of surgery for his hip. And then, of course, you look at the other things that have gone on with the team where a couple guys, David Backes misses a few games with the elbow, and David Pastrnak has been out, and Patrice Bergeron has been out. I think the fact that they haven't had the entire offense in as a group for an expanded period of time, more than anything, has been the issue that's kind of held the offense a bit behind everything else in the game.
I honestly have to laugh. If you can show me somebody who thought the defense was going to be this strong, then I'm going to ask him or her for the winning lottery numbers, because I don't think anybody saw this coming. I'm with Reed a little bit on the defense. Nobody could have expected Carlo to come in and play 20-plus minutes a night and do as well as he had. But, you know, the person that I think deserves credit, and I don't see him getting it anywhere. If he is, I'm certainly not seeing it, is Coach Cassidy and the work that he's done with the defense. Because even a guy like Joe Morrow, who played for Cassidy down in Providence, he himself said he feels great having Cassidy behind the bench. So I think Cassidy's had an impactful effect on the bunch. You know, again, I'll agree with Reed. I look at Morrow's play the other night where he made the pinch on the Bolesky goal. You know, those are the types of things that we expected to see from Colin Miller. I've been a little disappointed in Miller this season. I just think he's capable of doing a lot more than he has. And I know that there are fans out there that are high on him. I just, personally, my opinion, I haven't seen it this year. To me, I right now, and it's three games, it's a small sample size, but to me right now, I'd rather have Morrow in the lineup. A lot of people are also saying that Chara's resurgence is due to Carlo, and sure, maybe having him there has had a little bit to do with it, but you have to watch Chara and Carlo. Chara's coaching him through. He's talking to him at every opportunity, on the bench, on the ice, between whistles, what to do, and you can tell by the expression on Carlo's face, he's absorbing it all. He wants to learn. He wants to get better. And is there anybody better than Zdeno Chara to learn from? And I think it's the same reason why they kept Lyles around. And that's why you see the Morrows and the Millers paired up with Lyles so that they can learn. It's just whether they're capable of learning. And it's funny today, you know, we look at the offense and, you know, really there's a few games that they could have won. And it's not because of they lost because of the defense. They lost because the offense wasn't there. But like Reed said, you know, the Krejci injury, Pastrnak missing time with the suspension and now injury. Bergeron, to me, early on, he was playing injured. He seems to be coming around. The crew coming back from surgery. Backes missing time. So, you know, they really haven't had time to gel completely. And, you know, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, you guys make some great points. First thing on Carlo and Chara, what I did not see coming was the maturity and the poise. And that's just something you can't project. No matter how good a kid looks at the major junior level or college or even minor pro, you cannot account for how poised and calm under pressure and refined a game they're going to play at the NHL until you see it or you don't. And I think that's the difference between a Brandon Carlo at 19 and a Colin Miller who's, what, about 24 now?
I think he's 24 next week or
yeah,
the next
yeah.
couple of weeks.
I know he's a late 92, right? So,
yeah.
And even Joe Morrow, you know, not everyone progresses on the same timeline. And I was trying to pump the brakes on Carlo because I saw this hype machine just getting out of control, that the kid was going to be a savior. And you know what? He's not been a savior, but he's been a heck of a lot better than I imagined he would be coming onto this team. And I think you're right on, Dom, in terms of just how much of an impact playing with Chara has had on him. You have a future Hall of Fame defender, but what helps is that they are very similar in terms of their size, their reach, and the style of game they play. And I think, you know, you're looking at a perfect yin-yang left-right combo. One guy is 6'9", tallest player in league history, at least so far, and the other guy is 6'5", and he looks small when the two of them are together. Like, I look at the two.
Exactly.
I'm like, wow, he looks like he's 6'5", but he looks small next to Char. And so noted your body language comments, your constant coaching, and then the Cassidy point, I think, is right on. One of the things that I love about Butch Cassidy is when you interview him, and Mark Diver of the Providence Journal will back this up all day long. When you interview Butch Cassidy and you ask him hockey questions, he will go on for at least a minute or longer in his responses, because he will break it down and he will give you, this is a PG podcast, but he will give you the gnat's ass detail on the player or the question, you know, if you're asking a systems question or a player question. And I think he has been a popular whipping boy because he was not successful as an NHL coach. I get it. He's been a whipping boy because he didn't kowtow and play the favorites. But when you look at what this defense is doing, and just the fact that they're keeping things relatively simple, they're keeping the play in front of them, they're not running around too much, they're playing disciplined. He's the common denominator that wasn't there last year. So I think you're right on in terms of ascribing a lot, you know, a good deal of that success. Because let's face it, coaches coach, players have to perform. But I think you both raise very good points. Now, guys, talk me through Tuukka. Let's talk about Tuukka Rask, because, hey, look, we all know best defense on the planet can look worse than it is if the goaltender is not making the stop. So let's talk Tuukka Rask. And I'm a big believer in giving credit where it's due. You don't equivocate. If a guy's playing well, you give it to him. And I think right now, even the most grudging, ardent critic of Tuukka Rask has to give him a measure of due credit at this stage of the season, even though it's early. What say you?
It definitely deserves credit. I couldn't even guess how many games he's stolen this year. And, he's probably stolen a few of them, especially when the offense can't get going. But he's just been a beast back there. People complain because Carey Price is getting all the attention and so on. But that's just not true. I don't know what media everybody else is listening to, but I sure as heck hear a lot of praise for Tuukka Rask from people that cover the National Hockey League all over this country. So, he's just been a godsend to the Bruins this year. And, I mean, we only look when they had to go with McIntyre and Subban and Hudobin, how much he meant to the team. Sure, the team has come a long way since early in the season. They're getting the system down pat. They're getting players back from injury and so on and so forth. But, I just can't imagine what his record would be like if they could score one or two more goals here and there.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. You don't have to just hold Tuukka Rask up as this, unassailable, unimpeachable, player who is above criticism, nor do you have to rail on the guy and find fault with everything he does. The fact of the matter is, and Reed and I mean, we are birds of a feather in this regard. We have in the past been critical of Tuukka Rask's performance, and we've expressed doubts about his ability to be able to carry a team like the Bruins that are in transition or are clearly going to have some ups and downs. In the past, his body language was not what it needed to be. But I have to say, Reed, Tuukka has performed every bit the $7 million goalie and the elite talent that he is. And as long as that's the case, I mean, it doesn't have to be, diametrically opposing sides. People can meet in the middle and say, hey, give the guy a hand. He is really making the difference for the Bruins in the early going.
Oh, without a doubt. You look at his statistics, and they just – a lot of times with goaltenders, you can get bogged down in it because sometimes it's, well, how does the defense play in front of them? How many – what kind of – kind of as a borrow baseball analogy, what kind of run support is a goaltender getting? 13 games started, 11 wins, 2 losses, a 1.46 goals against average, but even more impressively, a .946 save percentage.
That's absurd.
In 13 games, that's not a small sample size at this point.
Yeah, and Dom, you know from your experience of being an analyst of the game, is that the thing about a goaltender, people call them the X factor, and there's a reason behind that, because it's not just the talent and the ability, but it is the confidence that a team will have. It's like a ship with the wind at their back. If they know their goaltender is on top of his game and pucks are coming in and they look like muskmelons or beach balls or whatever analogy, object you want to describe that makes it saving, the save elementary, they are going to play a different way. If they don't have the confidence, now it's tighter. Now they're
They're gripping the sticks. When a goalie can't bail them out, to use that term. Reed mentions the .946 save percentage. I mean, Reed and I are OHL guys, and when we look at a goaltender, when they're in the low 900s or hit 900 in the OHL, they're having a great season. So imagine what 946 is in the NHL.
Yeah.
The last two games, and I hate thinking this when a game is going on for goaltenders, is I go in the last couple of games and I thought, Tuukka's going to shut them out tonight. And he lost one with under 3 minutes to play and lost the other one with under a minute to play. Lost the shutout of the game. So, I'm at the point now where I expect him going into a game that, he's not going to allow more than one or two goals.
Yeah.
And if he gets, as Reed said, the run support, it's going to turn into wins.
And that's a contrast to last year when he would get the run support at times. But he was giving up more than his guys were giving him. And it just seemed to really wear on everyone. And in the body line, he was kind of surly and just didn't, I had my doubts that he could get on board with this team. He seemed to be
as did I.
Yeah. So, give the guy, his just due. But again, You can lead a horse to water. You can't make him drink. I think there's a lot of time spent on Twitter. I see a lot of people going back and forth, like trying to force people who don't, for whatever reason, like Tuukka, don't respect him, don't think he's the answer, force them to accept it. Look, some people just aren't, wired to accept accountability and to, to do a mea culpa as someone that I will not mention might have done on a blog recently. Some people, sorry, tooting the own horn there, but some people just aren't wired to do that. And I think that the people those that are just convinced that, hey, we gotta poke people in the eye, because the danger is, look, is this sustainable? Look, at some point it's going to level out. Things are going to happen. It's a long season. There's no reason to think that he can't continue to play at a very high level because he's got the confidence, he's feeling good. But there are going to be, you know, those inevitable lulls in play, bumps in the road, whatever you want to call them. And so, you know, the inverse effect is going to come out where the haters and the people who don't respect him are going to, yo, look, you know, he's struggling. You see, so I find this stuff to be counterproductive. What in you guys' mind do you think is the key for the team in terms of putting their best foot forward? How can they support Tuca when, as the season goes on, there is going to be a bit of a fall back to earth, and maybe he's going to need them to bail him out on occasion? What is going to be key to that, do you think? And where do the young kids fit into the mix? Because the Bruins have several young. We already talked about Brandon Carlo, but we have Austin Zarnik certainly gaining some positive reviews for his play. How does the team weather that storm of inevitability when the goaltender's 946 save percentage kind of levels off at some point, or does it?
I'm going to give an answer based on an old Claude Julien saying, and that's consistency of effort. It's always going to come back to that for the Bruins, because even when Tuukka Rask, and of course there's going to be a bit of a market correction there because you can't go through a season with those kind of numbers, but if you continue to see the effort out of Rask and you see the growth and the effort on the blue line and the offense gets healthy and they gel together, there's no reason to think this can't be a productive season. And when the slumps happen in one element of the game or another, like you're saying with the goaltending, that the rest of the team can't come together. Are they going to win every night? No, but they should be able to come together enough to have Rask's back and say, okay, tough night tonight, big fella, but we got you covered. And that's the mark of a team that will grow together, that will stay together, and that will succeed together, is that when one aspect goes down, the other aspects are able to pick that up and say, okay, don't worry about it. Bad night here, bad night there. We got you. We can pull through this together.
Exactly. I just want to add one thing about Tuukka Rask, if I can, guys.
Of course, man.
You know, I watch the games. I record them on DVR, and I watch both the Nesson broadcast and the opposing team podcast. And the game against Winnipeg, when the score was 1-0, the Hockey Night in Canada broadcasters, who are for the most part Winnipeg broadcasters, were saying when the score was 1-0, now they have to score 2 against Tuukka Rask, and that's a near impossible task. When it was 2-0, it was, well, now they have to score 3, and that's not possible. So when the broadcasters are talking like that, imagine what's going through the other team's mind, the players themselves. Oh boy, how are we going to get 3 on this guy? You know. So to add to what Reed said, you know, the defense is a work in progress. They have to continue to work. And you know, they've got a ways to go. They're far from perfect. You know, we see some lapses here and there, but they have to continue to improve. And as Reed says, put the effort in every night. I think the offense will come along once Krejci's at 100% and Bergeron and Pasternak now with his injury. And maybe when Betrano comes back, he slots into the top 9 and is able to put some pucks into the net. You know, the list goes on and on. You know, you mentioned Zarnik. Boy, I love that kid. And, you know, most teams are going to 4 forwards, 1 defenseman on the power play. But, boy, has he not made that second power play unit look different since he took over for Colin Miller.
5 forwards on the power play.
Yeah, it's an amazing job he's done there. And, you know, they've got a lot of talented kids, and, you know, all of them aren't going to make it in the NHL, or at least all of them aren't going to make it with the Bruins. They have a lot of assets, and maybe too many assets. So, you know, it might be time come trade deadline where you cut bait on someone to improve in another area. Where, you know, Kevin Miller is going to be back soon. They're going to have to make a decision on defense. Do they move an Adam McQuaid? Do they move a Kevin Miller? Do they move a Colin Miller? Do they move a Joe Morrow? Or if the four of them are doing all right, do you maybe consider moving John Michael Lyles as a rental or something like that? They're going to have to do something. There's a lot of assets there, and they can't all play.
Yeah, well, you're talking about that on defense, Dom, and I wanted to say the same thing basically about the forwards, because at some point a decision on somebody is going to have to be made. Now, I have my opinion on who that should be based on possible return and replacements, but when you look at Austin Zarnik, who has earned a spot on this team, Sean Corrali has come up and been a very solid player. Timmy Schaller,
he's been good.
I don't know how you get Timmy Schaller out of the lineup right now, because I've really enjoyed his game. And you look down at Riley Nash has been not spectacular, but the kind of guy that you can piece in here, you can piece him in there, you can kind of play him around the lineup, which adds a lot to him. Dominic Moore has been a revelation in Boston. There's been so many of these pieces that you start to look and go, well, who's the guy that kind – when Frank Vetrano is healthy, who's the first guy that you're going to bump? And to me, I think the guy wearing number 51 might be the one that I start looking at moving, because instead of sending down a Zarnik to Providence, I'd rather keep him on the team, because I think if you shop that fella in 51, you might be able to package something up to create a market to bring the defenseman you want in to help solidify the back line by moving some of these pieces that we're going to have to move with another attractive piece added in.
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg argument, though, to an extent with Spooner, because, and you have to be careful about this, is if he's not playing and he's not a marketable commodity, it's hard to just say, well, you know, trade him if there isn't a market for him. So I think it is a valid point. There's a lot more that Spooner is capable of. But the challenge that Zarnik has right now is that they can send him down without putting him on the waiver wire. And, you know, obviously they can't do that with Spooner. So I think if Spooner could raise his production level and get more opportunities and they're going to look at maybe trading him as a long-term, move to set up the organization for success in the longer term, which I don't know. I may or may not agree with that. I mean, you know, I'm a Spooner guy, and but at the same time, to me it's a no-brainer of a decision unless you've got a team willing to pony up and give you what you really need. And really right now, what are the Bruins really going to need that they're going to trade Ryan Spooner for? You know what I mean? They just don't have the option. They don't have the luxury. They can't waive him because he's gone at that point. If they do it. So, you know, it is certainly interesting to me.
I'll tell you who could really use him right now.
Who's that?
I tell you who could really use him right now is Buffalo.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, they, I, yeah. Isn't that funny? Right. They had that opportunity.
And Buffalo's talking to anybody and everybody right now about trying to work out a trade. That's the word I got. They're on the phone with everybody.
Yeah. And here's the my issue is that not so much that I'm against Ryan Spooner, because I'm not. I think he's a tremendously talented hockey player. I want to put that out there first.
And he's looked well the last few games on wing.
I agree. I just think that he wants to be a center, and you can see him still as a winger drifting into the middle, which kind of crosses him and Krejci up a little bit. And as much as I like Ryan Spooner, I think, unfortunately, in Boston, he's a little bit blocked in that with Krejci and Bergeron now, and I know he's a little bit off yet, but Jakob Forsbacka Carlson at Boston University is going to be an NHL centerman, and he's got an advanced two-way game in the middle. And that's something
third line center right there.
Yeah, and that's something that Ryan Spooner, again, tremendously talented, but his defensive game, is it going to catch up to the offensive game? And I think if he could if he could carve out that role on the wing, that changes the whole conversation. And maybe 2 months from now, we're having a whole different conversation because he's worked at it and worked at it on the wing, and he's turned himself into that player. But I already see Zarnik moving himself from a center position to a wing position and making himself excel there. That's what I want to see Spooner do. If he does that, then we've got an even harder problem, because then who do you move or who do you send down?
Well, guys, I'll just, you know, not to take this conversation completely off the rails, but I don't think it will. I was today working on my annual Bruins prospects review, and I had to make the decision. You know, I've been splitting the pro and the amateur, and that worked last year, but there are so many guys that are worthy of mention and having their own capsules that I just said, you know what, I'm going to cut the word count instead of doing these detailed analyses of the players. I'm going to list more guys. And it's like ridiculous when you look at the decisions, just like you're saying, not only in Providence, when you look at the quality, you're talking Danton Heinen, you're talking Jake DeBrusque right there. You've got Zane McIntyre. You've got Matt Grizzlick. You've got Peter Chalarik. You've got Dan Vladosh, you know, playing very well. I mean, he's not gonna come up and get a job right away, but he's certainly impressing. And then you go to the amateur side, and you're looking at Charlie McAvoy, you're looking at Zach Sinishin, you're looking at, oh my, you know, good golly, Miss Molly, Jakub Zboril is moving up in the rankings because he's playing, he's applying that talent, and he's showing more intensity and consistency in his game. Jakob Forsbacka Carlson, I have number 3 right now. Trent Frederick is in the mix. It's just, you're right. I mean, I don't know
Jeremy
how they're
Lozon.
Gonna. Jeremy Lozon's in there, but you know, he's unfortunately, I have to drop him a bit because he can't stay healthy. He's not been alive. He's missed something like almost 40 games going back to last season. And, you know, we're only not even 30 games into the Quebec season this year. That's a lot of time to miss. I still think the world of Lozon, but he's got to play more. And it isn't so much, and I even said this in the write-up, guys, I said it isn't so much Lozon is underperforming. It's that other people are playing so well. They're rising. They're elevating. I mean, Jesse Gabriel. You know,
I was just going to say him.
You know, he is your quintessential. When you talk about what the Bruins want in players, you know, that the quintessential lunch pail throwback style winger, that's Gabriel. And, you know, he slipped to the fourth round of the draft. This is a guy who on the Redline Report rankings for most of the 2014-15 season was a second rounder in talent. And then he dropped over some concerns about off-ice stuff. But I'll tell you, that kid really has answered the questions. His conditioning, like he went on a scorched earth baton death march of a conditioning program last off-season. When I saw him in Buffalo, he was there supporting Wade Allison, his buddy and his workout partner. He was ripped. And, he was the guy I thought, man, he might take a step back because he might have added too much mass to his frame and he might not be as effective. Nope. He is even
the exact opposite.
Yeah. I mean, he's still scoring. He's on this 40 goal. He's on pace to score more goals than he did last year. And he is a tough, tough dude to play against. So, guys,
my only disappointment with him is that he wasn't invited to play HL in the Canada-Russia Super Series.
Yeah, that is a good point. That's interesting. I have to think there's some kind of politics or maybe personality, but I don't know. I mean, all I can do is
that left wing position for Team Canada, and Sinishin's going to find the same thing on the right wing, is going to be hard to crack.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, don't even get me started on that Canada-Russia Super Series. We hosted a game in Hamilton. There was one Bulldog on the team, and there was multiples from other teams around the OHL, and we have Mackenzie Entwistle and Matt Strome, who are going to be first-round draft picks. So, yeah. that roster selection, I didn't understand right from the beginning.
Yeah. But getting back to the point, guys. I mean, the Bruins organization. When you look, I mean, Charlie McAvoy. You know, you got Coach David Quinn saying, "Hey, I'm talking to NHL guys," and they're saying he might be the best defenseman to come out of the 2016
draft. Yeah.
In a redraft, he'd have been the first guy off the board. So,
and you know, we were saying that in one of the podcasts we did, Kirk, that you know, following the draft, that he immediately jumps up to the Bruins' number one prospect, and you know. He was just, I mean, all three of us thought very highly of him, and all three of us said at the time that, you know, he could be up in Boston following his NCAA season. So, you know, I don't think it comes to as a surprise to the three of us, maybe to people out there listening that haven't followed the draft or don't usually follow the draft. This comes to no surprise, at least to... I don't think it does to us.
Yeah, no. Well, and you know, just real quick, and then Reed, go ahead and take it. But, you know, there's no secret. I was a Dante Fabbro guy, but I was also someone that said, hey, look, McAvoy just as easily could be the guy. And you can't go wrong with either player. They just bring different things. But now McAvoy is, you know, he is manifesting things that weren't as readily apparent in his true freshman season. But, Reed, go ahead.
Well, it's even deeper than we've been talking about, too, in terms of the prospect system, because you guys know I like to watch the games off the board from Europe. And Juuna Koponen leads the Finnish under-20 Junior A League. He's playing with guys up to 3 years older than he is. He's got 26 points in 19 games, leads that top line for his club, and everyone else in the top eight in scoring is at least a year and a half or more older than he is. And Oscar Steen in Sweden started the season not in the under-20 where they thought he would be. Keep in mind, as an 18-year-old, he started the season with Färjestad. Now, as anybody who watches Swedish hockey knows, that the junior players don't get necessarily the kind of run of ice time. He's been loaned to the legendary Modo program, Marcus Naslund, Peter Forsberg, the Sedin twins, Mattias Olund, in their hunt to get back into the top level in Swedish hockey, and he's played in every one of their games since he's been loaned over there. So, I mean, those are two guys at the back end of our prospect group who are making impacts far off in Europe that we may not even be talking about for a while, but boy, if one of them turned out, wouldn't that be icing on the cake?
Yeah, Koponen is just a surprise, total surprise to me, because this is a guy who spent very little time around the net in the under-18s for Team Finland. I mean, he was a good clamp-down guy defensively. He was key. You know, he was a part of their team. But I don't get, like, I didn't see, it was kind of like Trent Frederick, to be honest with you. Like, I didn't see the offense coming in and the rushes. And I mean, when you watch Trent Frederick skating through teams, you know, as he did, now he's injured now, unfortunately, but that highlight reel goal, I forget who it was against, but it was the week before last, and holy moly, he's like taking the puck and going coast to coast, driving the net, and then finishing off the play, and it's like, yeah, try to stop me. I did not see that coming at all. So, I mean, it is a good time to be a prospect watcher for the Boston Bruins. They're still not going to get the credit, though, that I think that they deserve, because a lot of these players don't have the high draft pedigrees. You know, they're not top three, top five picks. And so that's always going to hurt them in a writ large conversation. But for people that are paying attention and following it, they know the Bruins have a pretty nice stable of guys. And we haven't even gotten to Ryan Lindgren. He has no points, but boy, he's got some nasty to him, and he'll get there.
You know, it's almost to the point where there's too many of them, Kirk, and they're going to have to make some decisions. And I'm glad you brought up Trent Frederick, because his OHL rights were traded from the Niagara Ice Dogs to the Windsor Spitfires.
Memorial
Cup hosts. And I don't know if you guys heard today, Gabriel Vilardi, who's projected to be a top five pick, had an emergency appendectomy today, so he's going to be out. You know, and we know Zachary Smith just went through this along with his mono, but they're saying he could be out 4 to 6 weeks, which is going to hurt them in the standings. But the thing with Frederick is if the Bruins want to sign him once his NCAA season is over, they have the option to send him then to junior and play for Windsor and go get that Memorial Cup experience, which is great for players. I mean, you know, look at what that experience has done for some players. I look at a guy like Mitchell Marner with the Toronto Maple Leafs and how he killed that Memorial Cup and carried it right over to the NHL. Guys like him and Matthew Tkachuk, you know, could be an excellent opportunity for him if that's the route that the Bruins wanted to go with him.
No, I would imagine Trent Frederick would get a vote too. I just don't know how wedded he is to that situation in Madison. I know he's very, very close with Don Granato, who is his national team coach, so I don't know, but those are intriguing possibilities. I mean, if that's what the Bruins wanted and they were to, you know, talk to him, you know, very forthright and frankly about it, maybe that happens. You have to wonder, I mean, the Windsor Spitfires, they like have a preternatural sense for figuring out who's gonna bail and come out to them and you know, so I wouldn't like, my radar definitely went off when I saw that Niagara had dealt him to Windsor, because you figure Reichel and company are not gonna make that move unless they think there's a, you know.
No, and I think I talked with Reed about this once earlier, but there's a history between Reichel and the Bruins when, fan favorite Alex Kokolchev took off for the KHL the first time from the OHL, and the Bruins wanted him to come back. Peter Chiarelli at the time talked to Warren Reichel, and Warren Reichel had to make some moves to get Coco back into the lineup because they were at their limit for overagers. So he had to fit him in, and, you know, they had to delay the announcement until Reichel had made the moves that they could get Coco back in. So there is that working relationship between the Bruins and the Windsor Spitfires, at least a history of it.
All right, well, not guys. Just that, Dom, but maybe you could clean this up a little bit. As I've heard multiple reports from people around the OHL that have said that they believe – this is a much more real possibility to Windsor than it ever was to Niagara, because there's reportedly some very close relationship between Logan Brown and Trent.
Very, 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 very close friend is how they were described to me. So, you know, it's the depth. Windsor is so deep at center that Velarde is exclusively playing wing now, and he's a natural centerman. He's played center his whole life, and he's doing quite well at wing up until his emergency appendectomy today. So I'm not sure how he could fit in, but as Kirk said, the Warren Reichel doesn't make a deal unless he knows something. And, you know, that's not to say that it's going to happen, but as soon as I saw that trade where Niagara traded into Windsor, like Kirk, it set off alarms to me. And, you know, in talking to some people, that's how I got the connection with Logan Brown and how close he and Frederick were. And you know, the history between Reichel and the Bruins. So, yeah, I wouldn't be in the least surprised if it ever happens.
Now imagine a 1-2 punch of Logan Brown and Trent Frederick up the middle. That would be something very tough to match up against, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, guys, let's since we're on the we're on the kind of the OHL beat and the and we're kind of drifting to the draft. I, you know, Dom, it wasn't lost on me that you mentioned Gabriel Vilardi. He's a top three guy for Redline, just, you know, for what it's worth. Disappointing to hear that he's going to be on the shelf for a while with the appendectomy, and wish him well. Guys, let's talk 2017 draft, because that's something we all do well, and probably our podcast audience has come to expect. So you guys give me a couple players you've seen in the OHL that you think are going to be potential players for the, you know, maybe, you know, if not the Boston Bruins, at least guys that have really stood out to you for having Bruins type attributes, something that the Boston fans that listen to this podcast can sink their teeth into and start kind of looking into as we start to hit the halfway point of the season and the draft look ahead will start to become more and more keen and intense. So, Reed, let's start with you. A couple guys you'd like to throw out there, and then we'll go over to Dom, and then I'll give you a couple guys I've seen this year that I think are certainly worth following. So, Reed, what do you think?
Well, I've got to keep it in my own backyard because I think he is Bruins to the core. That's Mackenzie Entwistle, center for the Hamilton Bulldogs. And, I mean, the kid does everything. 16 years old, he broke into the league killing penalties. And then he's developed his offensive game. He's improved his skating. His two-way play continues to get better. His presence in the offensive zone, his puck protection, everything that he's worked on has come through for him. I absolutely enjoy watching the kid play the game. And, I mean, everything he does, right down to the way he gets into the corners, it just screams Bruins guy to me. And it doesn't hurt that he wears black and gold on a nightly basis either. You can kind of visualize it pretty easily when you watch him skating around First Ontario Center. Outside of him, Dom, I know you were talking to him earlier, talking about him earlier, Sasha Chmielewski. I love the potential there.
Oh, yes. But, you know, I'm going to stick in your backyard as well, Reed, and go with Matthew Strome. I'm not big on player comparisons, and I know you guys aren't either. And if people are looking to compare Matt to brothers Ryan or Dylan, who, by the way, was returned but to Erie today, if you guys hadn't heard.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
But Matt is nothing like his brothers. This guy is a power forward who makes his living in front of the net, has excellent hands in front of the net and in close. He's hard to knock off. I love his all around game. He shows potential to be a very good playmaker. He's a typical Bruin out of Reed's backyard there. And speaking to Entwistle, I had the chance to talk to his mom. I guess 2 weeks ago when I did a profile on him. Lovely lady. I think he comes from an excellent family, and I love them both. It's not going to be an overall good draft year for the OHL. I think you're looking at four guys in the first round: the Entwistle, the Vilardi we've talked about, Owen Tippett from Mississauga, and who am I missing, Reed?
Matt Strome.
Oh, Strome. Yeah, Strome, who I just talked about. I think they're your four first rounders. Be interesting to see if Michael DiPietro, the excellent goaltender with the Windsor Spitfires, gets in there. I mean, this guy, he's small, but he is everything else. And I think the only thing that might keep him back is NHL scouts love those big goaltenders nowadays. But this guy is the real deal, man. And he's been doing it for Windsor for, this is his second year now. And I think he has the ability to get up there. Nicholas Haight is the other guy from Mississauga, defenseman, huge defenseman who has all kinds of potential. And I think with his breakout this year is a reason why Mississauga was able to trade Sean Day to Windsor. And he's proven to be everything that is said to be of him.
He's a force.
Yeah, definitely. But it's not really a strong draft for defensemen out of the OHL. There's some good ones, but very good ones, but no excellent ones outside of them.
Hey, Don, check your connection, bud. You're like cutting in and out, unfortunately. So we're kind of losing. We're kind of losing some of the content. But appreciate you weighing in. Let me jump in though and give you an opportunity to maybe look at that. But there's a couple centers that I want to raise that I like a lot that I saw that I've seen live. One that I think is, he doesn't have the ideal size you want, but Casey Mittelstadt, Eden Prairie High School, Green Bay Gamblers of the USHL, might be the best USHL player I've seen in a long time. Just, he's got the ability, he's got the sense, and he has got those attributes that you value. I think he's a tremendous player. In his own right, very good. Another center that plays a very mature, refined game. He has NHL habits on and off the ice already. And what I mean by that is when you look at a player on the ice and you can see they're doing the little things, like they're not standing around watching the puck. They see an opening, they go in, they get the puck themselves, or they know to go in, you know, they know to eat the puck rather than get rid of it because they can see that they've got another teammate right along the wall that can come in and support and win that battle along the boards and maintain possession, or they know when to make that cross offensive zone feed. That's Shane Bowers of the Waterloo Blackhawks, and Quebec Major Junior Hockey League fans know his name well because he was a top five pick a few years ago, opted not to report to Cape Breton, went to the Waterloo Blackhawks and was recently a major gem, crown jewel type of recruiting signing by BU head coach David Quinn. I think this is the guy who's going to replace Jakob Forsbacka Karlsson. I think it's kind of baked in the cake. BU kind of knows he's going to sign with Boston soon, and they're going to lose him. And Bowers, who idolizes Jonathan Toews, has a lot of similar. You know, he's not this dynamic guy, but boy, is he a smart player, and he just tries to pattern and do everything like Jonathan Toews, and he's a good kid to boot. So those are a couple of centers that I've seen that come out of the USHL American circuit that I've got to think – would be high on any team's list. Certainly, we've got them as first-rounders in the Red Line report.
Kirk, I've also taken a long look with a guy, and his name surprises no one because he's usually in the top two. But I think because Nolan Patrick plays in North America and Timothy Liljegren plays in Sweden, that he's being criminally underrated. This is the best defenseman I've seen come out of Sweden since Hedman.
Yeah.
But
another defenseman, where is he going to play? You know, and again, you know, if you're going to get Timothy Liljegren, you know, I mean, look, if we're going to talk great defensemen in the draft, then I hear you. But if we're talking like Boston Bruins options, it doesn't look like he's going to be anywhere in the ballpark. But I agree
with you. Well, I didn't mean for the Bruins. I just mean in general. I think that if he played in North America, I think he'd be the number one overall pick. Yeah.
Maybe he was excellent in the under-18s in Grand Forks last year. Just very skilled and mature, and just made a lot of really nice, effortless-looking plays. I had a lot of time for him for sure. But he's up at the top of the draft. Someone's gonna get a top 1-2 guy for years. You know, the only knock on him, as you know, is his size. But man, everything else is just high end. He's going to be a heck of a player. Another guy, Eli Tolvanen, a lot of time for him. You talk about pure shooters, man, they don't come much more pure and deadly than the Finnish Boston College recruit who plays for the Sioux City Musketeers of the USHL.
I've heard he's got a line A level release.
Yeah, No, it's unbelievable. Now, man, I don't know that it's quite, I mean, it's we'll say it's poor man's Line A or Line A light. It's not quite the Linemite. but here's the thing, guys. On the occasion that Tolvanen misses the net, which is not often, okay, first of all, the puck comes off of his stick like grease lightning. But when he misses the net, you hear this reverberating clang as that thing hits the glass. And as a former goalie, I say to myself, oh my goodness, I would not want to get hit with that thing because it is heavy. And when you look at the kid out of his gear off the ice, he is as about as average a physical specimen as you can get. I mean, he's not, you know, he's under 6 foot. He's pretty skinny. How he generates the kind of power and the torque on that shot is beyond me. That's remarkable. I mean, that is just pure freak athletic genetics at work. I mean, that when he is dialed in and the puck is on his stick and he's anywhere near the net, he's scoring, and he will hit a very tiny, small spot. Watched him just put a shot over the goalie, played it perfectly, left him, you know, just a minuscule spot to hit over his shoulder, and he did it, and it was like nothing. And he did it in a full gallop off the rush. I mean, this kid's special. But again, I don't see him being in the Bruins range or wheelhouse, because he's gonna come off the board early. You can never put too much of a premium on these pure natural goal scorers. And I think there are certainly several NHL teams lying in the weeds. And he's a solid kid too. He speaks English well, and he won't be on the board long. Who else, guys? Okay, we're still there. I got you. Where did you lose me?
Okay. Oh, I didn't lose you at all.
Okay.
I was playing with my connection here and forgot to turn my mic back on.
Okay. I thought for a second we had gone down. One guy I want to offer to you, even though not necessarily he's a Bruins type guy, but because they have that just surplus of defensemen, I would be surprised if they ended up with him. But he is a New Hampshire kid, played for the Chicago Steel at the beginning of the season, very good, and he's gone back to Proctor Academy. Riley Walsh, this kid eats, breathes, sleeps hockey. Great kid, like just gets it, man. Very mature, a little bit of undersized defenseman, but he's kind of like, you don't want to use the comparisons, I know, but he's kind of like the Torrey Krug model, where he's just a leader and he's just driven and all he wants to do is compete and figure out what he needs to do to get better to make the NHL as a defenseman. Riley Walsh, he is my number one New England native for the draft. And, it's nice because he did it at the USHL level with Chicago. Now he's going to go back and tear up prep, and then he'll go back out to the USHL at the end of the season. So he's certainly a kid to watch as well as a top 50 who might even squeak into the late first round. But that size is an issue with him.
I think one adjective that you used that we're going to hear a lot of in this draft is Kirk. I think there's a lot of skilled forwards that are on the undersized side that can, and I think that we're going to hear it a lot at this year. Both up front and on defense, there's some undersized defense team.
Hey, Dom, unfortunately, you're cutting out again. You're cutting out again, bud. We've totally lost you.
Kirk, I'll give you. Oh, there he is.
Yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get any of that, but that's okay. We're going to wrap this podcast and quit while we're ahead. But, Reed, go ahead and take us home, will you?
One guy who might be on the board when the Bruins come up to pick, depending on how the chips fall, and depending on how his season goes, is Vanya Lodnia of the Erie Otters. And he's a little bit undersized, but dynamic offensively. And the nice thing about Lodny is he can both score goals and set the play. He's an electric skater. He's not – the one thing that could be a knock on him but maybe a blessing if the Bruins were interested in him is the fact that he's neither the most gifted at scoring goals or the most gifted at making plays. He just does both very well. And as a lightning-fast skater, and he would be somebody as a bit of a project. I think he would take a little bit of time, but he could be a really nice addition to a Bruins group that keeps adding more and more skill as we go along.
If not for the fact that are you good, man?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, go ahead.
Just to add to what Reed said, that's the point I was making earlier, is the term undersized. We're going to hear a lot of it this year.
Unless we're talking about Isaac Ratcliffe, right?
Right.
What a monster.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Aircraft carrier with feet.
Yeah. He's not undersized. But
a lot of undersized players that can skate and are skilled in this draft. We're not going to get a lot of those huge guys in there.
Yeah. You got Chmielewski and Keating, right? Both with the 67s. They're kind of fall into that category, yes?
Yeah, and funny, I'm going to be doing a write-up on the two of them in the next few days. I talked to one of the 67 scouts today, and Jim Hunt, the huge Bruins fan, who's their director of player development and head scout. So I'll have something up on them in the next few days.
Love those barber poles, man. Love those barber poles. One more guy, although the Bruins have never taken a Swiss player in history, and I don't think it will start, though I have a lot of time for Nico Hischier, who's out at with the Halifax Mooseheads. He was the nails at the under-18s, by far Switzerland's best player, and it wasn't even close. He's a gamer. He's come in and played very well in North America. Took a little bit of time to figure things out, but boy, he's going to be a heck of a player, I think, for whoever drafts him. And, you know, I would like to see the Bruins maybe get off of the, you know, no Swiss policy. And if they were ever going to reverse that policy and make an exception, he'd be a nice place to start.
Heard nothing but good things about him.
No.
Yeah, same here.
It's legit. Like he's smart, and, you know, he's very creative and plays with pace and energy and, you know, really – you'll really like him. So we'll see. Well, guys, I think we are over an hour. We have packed a lot of quality hockey talk into another Three Amigos podcast. I want to thank you all for joining us. And if there's any alibis, as we say in the military, in other words, things that we didn't cover that you really are just have this burning desire to get out, we can do that now, or we can just wrap it up and say adios, amigos, until the Three Amigos ride again. What do you say?
I just want to say one quick thing. In one of our podcasts, we said, you know, this team is like 3 years from being a legit contender. We're just starting to see what they're capable of. When these kids come along, get a little bit more experience, I think they're right on track for that. And go Bruins.
Okay. Reed?
Frank Vetrano, please get well soon. We can't wait to see you back in the lineup.
And I have a guy for you, Reed, being the sweetophile that you are. Elias,
yes, sir.
Peterson of Timrå, right winger, 6'1", very good player. Put your bullseye on him and watch him go rise up the draft rankings this year.
Well, I'll be looking into more Timrå games now.
Yep, Elias Peterson, he's legit. Okay, guys, well, again, I thank you so much. Let's reiterate our well wishes to Craig Cunningham and his great family. He's strong, and we believe he's going to pull through, but we will continue sending thoughts, prayers, and all powers of positivity so that he can make a speedy recovery and get back at it. Craig, Connor, we're thinking about you, man. And, you know, he didn't spend a great deal of time in the Boston Bruins organization, but the time he spent was quality, and he touched a lot of people and earned a lot of respect. And that's really the true measure of the man when it all gets down to it. Hockey is a game, and it comes and goes, but the character endures. And Craig Cunningham is one of the finest representatives and ambassadors to our beloved sport. So, Connor, be strong, man. A lot of people are behind you, and all the best. For Dominic.
Well said, Kirk.
Oh, thanks.
Beautiful.
For Dominic Reed, this is Kirk, and we are out of here. Thanks for listening.
You say you know just who I am.